The following is a production of Snake Tree Media. This is Urgent Frequency, the sonic sit rep for Urgent Fury, the hottest tactical gamer community on the World Wide Web. And now, here's your host, Commander Claymore Fury.
Hoo-yah, Frequency Freaks! I am Commander Claymore Fury, and this is Urgent Frequency for the week of Sunday, September 12th, 2010. This week, we'll look back on the grand finale of the second evolution of Urgent Fury Black as we welcome two warriors fresh from the battlefield to give their eyewitness accounts of the war that was the Urgent Fury Black Championship. Then, we'll turn to the gang at GameTrailers.com to find out if Halo Reach makes the grade, especially without the presence of the game's poster boy. Plus, Urgent Frequency remembers 9/11. You know, I never thought I'd be asking Cher to hold my meat purse either. This is Urgent Frequency.
Hey, this is Paramedic from the Ravenfall.
And this is Maddie from Clan Uprising.
And you're listening to Urgent Frequency.
Only on UrgentFury.com.
The brave men and women in our nation's armed forces made a commitment to protect us and our freedoms. Many will come home with missing limbs, severe burns, or traumatic brain injuries. The Wounded Warrior Project was created to help and support these injured heroes through programs and services that help make their recoveries easier. Regardless of your position on the war, our injured veterans deserve our support. To learn more, call 1-877-832-6997 or visit woundedwarriorproject.org.
On a bright summer morning, under a clear and cloudless sky, terror struck. To grasp the enormity of it is almost too much for the heart to bear. September 11th, 2001. It is a date that will be etched in history, engraved in stone, and in our memories. The day of the attack on America.
Oh, another one just hit. Something else just hit. A very large plane just flew directly over my building, and there's been another collision. Can you see it?
We just saw a plane circling the building.
Matt, I've never seen any. It looks like a movie. I saw a large plane, like a jet, going immediately headed directly into the World Trade Center. It just flew into it, into the other tower, coming from south to north. I watched the plane fly into the World Trade Center.
I just saw a second plane come in from the south and hit the south tower, halfway between the bottom and the top of the tower. It's got to be a terrorist attack. I can't tell you anything more than that. I saw the plane hit the building.
I was there, and I saw the building collapse. We all started running.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward.
Even now, the world is bleeding, but feeling just fine. All numb in our castle, where we're always free to choose, never free enough to find. I wish something would break, 'cause we're running out of time. Giving light to the unaware. This plastic little blue is just a step amongst the stairs.
Drive me out.
vibration off and spin around. Your help is here, but I'm parking this open space, locking the gates of love. And I am overcome. Yeah, I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my lungs. Yeah, I am overcome. Yeah, I am overcome. Oh, Lord. I am overcome, baby. Holy water in my lungs. Holy water, holy water. I am overcome.
There was another cell phone call made from someone who locked himself in a rear bathroom who said that we're going to have to do something because it appears we're going to die either way, and we have to try something. I mean, it appears that something heroic did take place on that flight.
I firmly believe that.
Beautiful drowning, this beautiful drowning, this holy water, this holy water is in my lungs.
Flashback.
Do you ever feel like you're lagging behind the rest of the group? Do you get the strange suspicion that you're in everyone's crosshairs at work? When out with friends, do you feel like no one around you can hear a word you're saying? If you do, don't despair. You may be suffering from late-term undergrowth syndrome. Late-term undergrowth, or LTU, affects nearly 32 people every year, and that number is growing every month or so. Fortunately, there's a cure just around the corner in the form of ARIS. With ARIS, your feelings of isolation, depression, and paranoia can be suppressed so that life, your life, can get back on target. ARIS stabilizes critical control points in the brain that trigger these negative emotions and diffuses them within 4 seconds. Stop living in the darkness and uncertainty of late-term undergrowth and come to the light that is ARIS. With ARIS, life finally comes back into focus.
Side effects of ARIS may include vomiting, nausea, light sensitivity, irritable bowels, athlete's foot, chronic migraines, bestiality, loss of hair, reduced sex drive, asthma, acute flatulence, dry mouth, birth defects, possible confusion of the sexual preference, bleeding eyes, and an overwhelming desire to fire automatic assault weapons. If you're currently taking an antidepressant, see your doctor before taking ARIS.
Urgent frequency.
What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude, what does mine say?
Sweet! What about mine?
Dude,
what does mine say?
Sweet!
Bungie Studios. They've been the caretaker of Microsoft's flagship title for the Xbox for more than a decade, and no one can deny the impact that Halo has made in the gaming world. But when Halo Reach hits store shelves this week, it becomes the final installment of the franchise that Bungie will produce. That's why some industry insiders find it so strange that Bungie would risk producing a game without Master Chief, the iconic character that the entire Halo universe is built upon. So, we turn to GameTrailers.com to find out if Halo Reach makes the grade, even without the man in the green armor.
Trailer
Just when we thought we'd finished the fight, there was still some orbital drop shocking to be done in ODST. And then we were told one last mission was within reach before Bungie would spread its love across multiple platforms. And while Halo Reach is set before Master Chief's tour of duty, Spartans and their brand of combat are present and accounted for. Can this return to super soldierdom thrive without the men in green armor?
Not gonna lie to you, Lieutenant. You're stepping into some shoes the rest of the squad would rather leave unfilled.
Set just before the events of the very first Halo, Reach is all about saving the titular planet from a Covenant invasion. As one of the last strongholds of humanity and the military base of the UNSC, the planet is integral to the survival of the species. Enter Noble Six, Master Chief's equally tight-lipped predecessor. As the game begins, he joins Noble Team, an elite squadron seen as the planet's last hope to repel the invasion.
Commander.
So that's our new number six.
What's been impressive about the Halo games to this point is that the stories have remained engaging despite never even seeing the main protagonist's face. The same holds true here. Noble Six is a mysterious figure, and it's hard to glean what lies behind the visor. This time around, your fellow Spartans are humanized. Not shy about removing their helmets, you get a great look inside what drives each one of them.
Keep still, and I'll release you.
Self-sacrifice for a greater good is a big part of the story, along with the sense of dread knowing that no matter what you do, Reach is going to fall. It's almost like watching a great documentary about a horrible event. You already know how it's going to end. The unexpected twists and turns on the way there give you glimmers of hope, only for them to eventually be dashed. There's definitely some smart fan service to be had as the story lurches towards the Chief's debut.
No, somebody tell me this ain't happening.
UNSC frigate grafted. Do you copy?
When you first boot up the game, you're asked to create your Spartan, and the ladies have not been left out. Each soldier has a bevy of armor choices to customize their look, and as you play through the various modes, you're rewarded with ranks and points to purchase new parts that ultimately function as badges of honor. If you've played any of the prior Halo games, then you know how the four-player co-op-enabled campaign is designed. You're shuttled from one skirmish to another with plot points in between. Pacing has always been a series' strong point, and there's very little downtime in Reach. With very few ebbs and flows in the action, it can come off a bit monotone at times, even though the tone is a high-pitched shriek.
What you saying? It's over!
We've been engaged!
We've been spoiled over the last half decade by other shooters with varied missions and set-piece events. This is one area where the campaign in Reach falls a bit short. Your mission is to kill everything before moving on to do it again with very little deviation. At around 8 hours, the campaign almost feels like a bonus on top of an extraordinary multiplayer sweep. If you thirst for the thrill of human competition, Reach will satiate. Built on Halo 3's already staggering list of options, you could conceivably spend the rest of your natural game-playing life fiddling around with it. The list of match options borders on overkill. Just about any conceivable combination of flags, vehicles, weapons, generators, teams, and terrain has already been cooked up by the chefs at Bungie. New modes that stand out include Stockpile, where you have to go out and collect flags and then return them to a zone where they have to be defended to score, and Generator Defense, where teams are split into Spartans and Elites before taking turns attacking and defending. Of course, you still get all the old classics like Team Deathmatch, Capture the Flag, Territories, Juggernaut, King of the Hill, and the list goes on and on. Before each match, you're given the option to vote on the map and match type, and once the timer ticks down, you're able to choose from predetermined weapon loadouts. With literally dozens of ways to play, the enhanced Forge option that allows you to build your own maps and game types almost feels unneeded. At least if you do dive in, you'll find it to be much more user-friendly and versatile. Co-op survival modes are all the rage these days, and ODST's extremely popular firefight option has made its way into Reach. Every bit as fun as competitive multiplayer, wave after wave of increasingly difficult enemies are shuttled your way with weapons appearing as you reach certain milestones. Taking place on 8 different maps for up to 4 players, it scales very well, depending on the number of combatants. Since Reach is a prequel, we didn't expect much in the way of new weapons and technology, but we were wrong. While Bungie's take on the Hammer of Dawn doesn't exactly make sense within the context of the series, we're more than happy to use it. New enemies are scarce, but there are a lot more vehicles to pilot. We could literally talk about the design of Halo Reach for an hour. The disc is absolutely bursting with content to explore. 9 stock maps for multiplayer is a little low, but the plethora of match variants provides a fresh perspective on each one. If you look for a lot of value in your video game purchases, you can't do much better than this. exception of the more traditional ODST, Halo is known for its fast-paced, bullet-riddled, melee-dealing combat. If you've grown used to a burst of gunfire taking down an enemy, the full clip and then some it takes to drop the Covenant will be jarring at first. You just need to remember to lay on the trigger a little more. With a rebounding shield and an underlying health meter like the first Halo, it's all balanced. And you can even replenish health by finding terminals strewn around the levels. Weapons now have what's called targeting gloom. Basically, your aiming reticle will animate after you squeeze the trigger, letting you know when your gun has reached full accuracy potential. There's a rhythm to each weapon, and it can be tough to wait for targeting gloom before squeezing off another round, but it's another risk-reward element that adds to the strategy. There's several new additions to the arsenal, but what most will be happy to hear is that the Magnum pistol has been restored to its former glory. Meanwhile, the new weapons are hit or miss. We love the new needle rifle and the Hammer of Dawn-like target locator, while the focus rifle that shoots a devastating laser and the plasma launcher that dispels up to 4 homing grenades are too powerful in multiplayer situations. Dual wielding has been removed, but it's not missed as much as you'd think. Another new addition is armor abilities. Basically taking the place of deployables from Halo 3, you can use them over and over once they've recharged. While they're only needed on the harder difficulty settings in the campaign, in multiplayer, their usefulness can literally change second by second. The sprint is the most obvious and generally useful, but using the hologram to throw off snipers, the jetpack to reach weapons, active camo to sneak up on the enemy, and the elite-only dive roll in a variety of situations undoubtedly adds depth to the experience. The only ability we're not fond of is armor lock, because it creates awkward situations where you stand there waiting for the shield to die to finish an enemy off.
Lost the lead.
While spending credits to update your armor builds some incentive, it's purely cosmetic. Melee attacks have been a valuable tool in the Halo arsenal for years, but in Reach, they're weaker than ever. Landing a melee attack only removes an enemy's shield and does not touch their overall health, making it more difficult to get kills. You can also hold the melee button when approaching an enemy from behind for assassinations, but they take so long to complete that we actually prefer just using the butt of the gun. The first two Halos were primarily corridor shooters with a few open spaces. Halo 3 opened things up a bit, and Reach takes it even further. This facilitates much more squad-based strategy, even though you have no control over what they do. Allowing the computer to take up the main front and occupy the enemy while flanking is the easiest way to get through the harder skirmishes. Just don't count on them dropping many Covenant troops or doing a good job behind the wheel of vehicles. Enemies, on the other hand, are absolutely devilish on Heroic or Legendary. For all the pre-release hype built around it, space battles are an extremely small part of the game. Lacking significant challenge, they're not bad, but they're not exactly needed either. Despite all the changes, Reach still plays like a Halo game. It's frantic, and each confrontation is completely unpredictable. You'll eventually grow tired of seeing one dropship after another in the campaign, and some new weapons are overpowered, but otherwise, this is the yin to Call of Duty's yang. Halo 3 was a bit of a disappointment where visuals were concerned, and ODST didn't bump things up much. Reach definitely features a noticeable improvement. The textures have heightened clarity, the environments have a lot more detail, and there are a lot more enemies on screen at a time, and overall, it just has a much more vivid display. None of this comes at the sacrifice of fluidity or enemy AI. Weapon effects are the biggest standout. The physics have also been jacked up, resulting in some entertaining multiplayer moments. That said, the game still falls a cut below the upper echelon of visual masterpieces. Some areas still come off as a bit barren, and enemy animation appears a bit robotic at times. Martin O'Donnell returns to score Reach, and the compositions are some of the most somber and subdued in series history. The music curtsies up next to the inevitable demise of the planet quite well, and manages to impart a sense of impending doom across the entire game. It's great stuff. The voice acting is solid, and the script toes the line, and the Covenant no longer speak English, making them feel all the more alien. The amount of content in Halo Reach would be absolutely staggering if most of it weren't already found in Halo 3 almost 3 years ago. Even so, few other games come close to its value and overall functionality. The gameplay tweaks are many, and most hit the mark without sacrificing that Halo feeling. Now, 4 games into the series, there's no denying that the campaign is starting to lose some of its moxie, yet there's just enough revelation here for fans to cling to. But let's be honest. You're going to decide to buy based on its multiplayer component, and this is where it delivers in spades. Master Chief may be retired, but calling this a Halo game is no reach.
Halo Reach for the Xbox. It's available now.
There are times when you have so much to say, just so little time.
Excuse me, what?
Good thing there's Twitter. We got you covered with the latest and the most talked about topics. 140 characters at a time. Follow us on Twitter.
Urgent. Frequency. Frequency.
Both of my guests tonight recently participated in the championship match for Evolution No. 2 of Urgent Fury Black 2010. Both come to us via the northeastern United States, and both are veterans here in Urgent Fury. First, Maddie 2D is co-leader of one of the true powerhouses here in Urgent Fury, along with Mike Jackson. He is co-leader of Clan Uprising, or the U, a clan that has consistently stacked up win after win, making their presence felt in each and every tournament event they participate in. Then we welcome Unit Commander Paramedic, representing the Ravenfall, or RVN, a hybrid super clan founded by the co-creators of Urgent Fury that once served as the official clan of this community. I almost screwed that up. What's up, guys? Welcome to Urgent Frequency.
What's
How's
up?
How's it going?
Hey, it's going pretty good, man. I've had a rough week. I hate to complain. I hate to start this whole thing by complaining. But let's see. The Chicago Cubs were mathematically eliminated from the possibility of making a postseason appearance this year, which you're pretty happy. I know Maddie's pretty happy because you just watched your Baltimore Ravens. You think Ray Ray's going to sleep good tonight after all the hubbub that he's made about Coach Ryan's comments?
Yeah, they definitely will. I mean, that was a pretty nasty game on both sides, but, you know, we're pretty fortunate to be on the winning side. A win is a win, but, you know, we'll take it on the road.
But it was a close game. What was the final score? It was 10-9, wasn't it?
Yep, 10-9.
10-9. How does that happen? Jeez.
Just a defensive slugfest. It was pretty nasty. A lot of big hitting going on, but, you know, that's some Ravens and Jets football right there. Defenses going right after each other.
Paramedic, dude, you've had a – see, here I am complaining, and you kind of had a busy night too, man. I don't know if you're a sports fan. I don't know if you've had any sports tragedies, but as your name implies, you said you had a hazmat event earlier tonight?
Yeah, I was supposed to get off at 7 o'clock, and about an hour before I was getting out, I get a call from a lady – who somehow discharged the entire contents of a gas station's, you know, fire suppression system, which contaminated probably, you know, 10 people on the store and everything around it. So, but all that put aside, the worst part of the night was the Yankees getting put into second place. So
you did have some sports tragedy. We're kindred spirits then. We're kindred spirit. Well, I don't know. Maddie didn't have a tragedy. I guess he's pretty happy about the week one of the NFL.
I guess I could throw in my Baltimore Orioles. They were eliminated like 2 months ago from the playoffs.
Baltimore still got a baseball team? No, I'm sorry.
Unfortunately.
I think Buck's going to turn him around, man. I think he's the guy that can maybe get something done. Didn't they have like a winning record once he got there?
They almost swept New York too.
Yeah, he's something like 24-14 since he took over. I think they showed a stat on ESPN like a week ago that, you know, since he's taken over, they've had the best record in the American League East. It's we won today, so, you know, hope for next year, but that division's so tough. I mean,
yeah, they need to realign. I said that about, we see, now we've turned this into a sports show, which I don't care, but I've been saying for years that they need, like Toronto, a great example. I think the Jays had a really respectable season for the first time in a while, and nobody even noticed because They've got Boston, New York, and Tampa all in that same division. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about baseball, football, MMA, or Thai cockfighting. We are here to talk about the No Boom Bonanza, is what I call it, because it's crazy, man. It's not about explosions or splosions and paramedic. He's one of those rocket guys. He's one of those guys that makes you want to quit playing the game because you come around the corner and you eat a rocket. Urgent Fury Black, it was started as just a little idea a few years back, and it's just blossomed into this really... What do you guys think the appeal is of Urgent Fury Black? Because, I mean, everybody loves the TAC map, and they love the format of the TAC map, but Maddie, we'll start with you. What is it about Black that's so different than all the other tournaments?
I mean, obviously, you know, the no nades plays is a huge factor. I mean, it's all about strategy, pretty much. All the clans are on an even playing field. You know, it's basically who's going to blink first. You know, it's a lot of camping going on, pretty much. And whoever can get off the first round, they have a really good chance of pulling out the game. But, you know, it's a slugfest back and forth. It's really a unique tournament because of the no-nade factor. It really is.
What about you, Medic? Which I always say it's bullets and brains. What do you think about the popularity of Urgent Fury Black, Medic?
Well, with Black, I have to concur with Maddie there by saying that the no nades really puts the pressure on the team. If you don't have a strong team, you don't have people that can communicate, you're not going to be able to bounce a nade off a wall and take out three guys. It's really, you know, have one guy be a spotter, concentrate on your sniping fire, particularly in this particular war. We had, you know, our snipers have a slugfest. Maddie was in it. He'll agree with that. So it really comes down to the teamwork. And the taking out the explosions adds a whole new element to it, which you really don't grasp when you're playing a all boom war. So
I guess it's more like you have to be really smart at first, and then you got to be really tough. Once you get that one win, then you got to start holding your own. And Clan Uprising, you guys, and we talked about this when you guys played LPK, and just like I mentioned there in the intro, man, you guys just win. But now, in all fairness, the beginning of this evolution of Urgent Fury Black, you guys, it's not fair to say that you struggled, but it seemed like you guys did kind of have a slow start this time around.
I think it's fair to say we struggled. I mean, this was probably hands down our weakest regular season out of the tournaments we participated as a clan on Urgent Fury. I mean, I think we were barely over 500, and you know the clans are improving. I mean, we struggled hands down. We had some tough losses against some good clans. RVN, CKS, KOH. They put a beating on us. A couple wars we lost pretty bad too. So
what do you have to do in a case like that? Do you I mean, is it something where you have to analyze each and every war, each and every shooter, or what do you do, man? Just say, hey, we know what we're doing. We've been here before. Because I'd say that the experience that you guys have in postseason definitely makes you tougher, especially when you get down to that championship game, if you make it that far.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think activity plays a big part of it. I mean, during these past couple months, we've had some inter-clan troubles, and our numbers are down, but you know we have a strong core, and you know when we're all together playing, you know we are tough to beat.
Yeah. What about RVN, Medic? I mean, of course, I'm asking this like I don't know, but I don't know. It seems like we have a different dynamic than we've had in the past.
Well, everybody knows, no big surprise, when it was APC and Rogue 7, and then we merged. We were always a recruit based on applicant clan. We never actually had to go out. We had that reputation behind us. We were winning constantly, kind of like the U was back in the last big UF TACMAC war. And we started a new recruitment push where we're doing much more active recruitment. We're going out finding those dedicated gunners to SOCOM who are SOCOM heavy for, you know, most of their, in this case, like their adult life, I guess you'd say. And we picked up some good gunners. So it definitely has been some positive, but we've also had to put the pressure on the people that, you know, stuck through the thick and thin with us. So we kind of had to stick with our veteran team while we're trying to balance getting the new guys' experience in the wars. So it's been definitely a challenge.
Obviously, you made it to the championship game, so RVN was much more successful this time. Would you credit that active recruiting for the success this time around?
Well, to say that we made a 180 over the last 90 days, even going back 2 months, yeah, our activity online definitely drastically improved. Rather than having four or five of the typical guys on every night, we're pushing 10 to 14, which, you know, raises the morale of everybody else that's playing and putting time in, and thus increase our you know, ability to practice with one another, practice against other clans, have scrimmages, which was something that we really started picking up right before Black started. I almost could describe it as going back to our basics. We kind of went back to our basics, went back to our roots, figured out what worked back then, tried to apply it to now. And you know what? It was a heartbreaker of a war, but it was one hell of a war nonetheless.
The score just really wasn't representative of how close it really was at the end of the day. Maddie, what do you guys do to get ready for any war? I mean, is there a certain training exercise, or is there something that you guys do? Or is it just kind of like a respawn, run and gun? Or what do you guys do to prepare for a war?
Our pre-war starts 2 hours before the actual war time. And, you know, for the first hour and 15 minutes, it's just playing this same map over and over that we're going to play tonight. And it's pretty much just getting loose. But we're also evaluating who's hot that night. You know, we don't have set lineups going in. We see who's on, who's playing well. So we get the lineup based on that hour and 15 minutes of playing time. And then for the next half hour, we do like an extensive walkthrough. You know, we physically go into the map with our lineup. We do a couple plans sometimes on each side. And, you know, I find it's better to do it in-game. You know, people will get a better idea of what's going on when they're actually in the war or in the map, seeing where everyone's at. You know, it has helped us in a lot of wars.
Like I said, I'm asking like I don't know, but what does RVN do when they get ready for a war? Pretty much the same thing?
UF Black, we change it up very slightly. We usually start about an hour to an hour and a half ahead of time. We'll run through the map in daytime, run through the map at nighttime. We'll throw in what we started something new. We started a respawn because a lot of people were complaining we weren't able to get adequate gunfights in, and people weren't getting their guns out because we were just playing, you know, typical wartime. Yeah, and that was something new that we tried. We pulled the general, you know, rank and file of RVN, and they came up with that idea. So we ran with it, and I definitely think it was, you know, quantitative of where we ended up in terms of the championship. So
you both mentioned inactivity with your players and stuff. I'll let both you guys talk about this a little bit. Why do you think it is that it seems like a lot of clans, like I said, do you think it's because more games have thinned out the ilk? Or what do you think the cause is for inactivity amongst so many clans, specifically SOCOM clans?
I think it's a whole bunch of different factors. You know, this SOCOM hasn't really had the longevity that, you know, the other zipper-made SOCOMs have, hands down. I don't think it's as popular. And you got to throw in Call of Duty. You know, back in the PlayStation 2 days, SOCOM didn't really have a huge competing shooter. Call of Duty wasn't really that popular back in the day. But for us personally, Call of Duty was a big driving factor in SOCOM activity going down because a lot of people were playing Call of Duty. We lost, you know, half a dozen or so members. You know, I would say it's a combination of Call of Duty, other games, and that SOCOM just isn't what it used to be.
As soon as Modern Warfare, the first one, dropped, it seems like everything changed. And we know from some of the research we've done, we know that Activision, first of all, they don't really care much about, they don't care as much about their community, I don't think, as SOCOM does. Also, they've been clear about the fact that they don't really care about clan support because they don't really care about clans. So think about all the titles that are out right now. But what do you think has played a big part in the inactivity?
Well, there's no question that Call of Duty played a huge factor in taking a large number of players away from SOCOM as a whole. It totally gave a different dynamic from what people were looking for. And right around the time that Call of Duty came out, you know, Slant 6 kind of took SOCOM confrontation and put it so far on the back burner by cutting its staff. The 1.6 was delayed. Even the 1.5 was delayed. And like you said, Call of Duty really doesn't care about the community, but as soon as Call of Duty came out, so Slant 6 kind of did the same thing with SOCOM, which I think turned it off for a lot of people. They made all these promises and they delivered maybe, let's say, on 60% of what they promised. They said, we still can't control the side switches, and that was something they promised when the manual came out, just as one example.
That is true. And you know what? When we got to hang out with the Zipper crew, we let them know. We had our little list of, please, sir, can you address these problems? You know what? The thing with Modern Warfare, that's a great game. Look, I don't care how hardcore of a SOCOM guy you are. I don't care if you like Zelda or whatever game it is. You can't play Modern Warfare and not go, wow, this is, and I've said it before on this podcast, I think that Modern Warfare, Infinity Ward, whatever you want to call it, I think they re-established the bar. I think SOCOM set the bar, but I think that Call of Duty Modern Warfare definitely reset the bar. They definitely raised it. But let's get to the war, guys. Of course, we talked about the competition during the regular season. We know that Clan Uprising struggled a little bit. It seemed like RVN definitely thrived a little bit. When you get to the championship, I guess that's where all of it pays off. So how did you guys start the war? And Matty, I guess I'll let you start. How did you guys start the war? I guess it was what, Wednesday night that you guys did this?
Yeah, Wednesday night.
You know, we take it the same approach as any other war. You know, the same typical pre-war. We don't do anything different, no rah-rah or anything to try to get us pumped up. I mean, we try to, you know, stay focused. You know, we were playing Desert Glory twice. It was Demolition first, I believe, and then Suppression second. So Desert Glory has been our map for, you know, as long as we've been around. So we were going to have the same strategy that we have been successful with for almost 2 years now. We started out on Commandos first. I think RVN chose sides because, yeah, I'm pretty sure RVN chose Mercenaries. And, you know, I think the first couple rounds were draws. I think the sniper battle was what really started to change the way the war was going. I think our snipers started to kind of get an edge, and, you know, we were able to sneak a couple rounds on the SEAL side, and, you know, we went on the switch, and I think we won the map 5-2, but, you know, it was a lot of back and forth. You know, RVN had a couple good rounds throw a couple rushes at us a couple times when we were SEALs that kind of threw us off guard too.
So how did you guys counter the sniping performance?
Well, I was actually doing something different. I actually at the end of every round or when I died, I'd run over to the computer and I was typing a brief synopsis up for the rest of the Ravenfall that weren't able to make it in the war, kind of drive up morale. So I actually had the whole thing written up as it was going on. And I think the key to the U take in their map was that they won round one. They got first blood on us. And then it went draw up until the fifth or sixth round, in which they just took the advantage where we had to try to get a round back on them, and they used that to their advantage. I believe, yeah, the final score was 6-1, and you took their map. And then we kind of used that same strategy that they used on their map to our map, and the snipers did play a huge factor, not so much in the demolition, but more so on the suppression map, where, like I was telling you on the side, the score, which was 11-3, really was not quantitative of how close the rounds actually came. It came down to one or two kills each and every time, with, you know, maybe one guy left in either side. So I don't know if Matty would agree with me on that.
Yeah, definitely. The suppression wars, like you just said, one or two kills decides the win. You know, usually in demolition, you can have a more decisive win, but, you know, one more kill than your opponent on suppression, you know, and you get the round. And I believe the second map, suppression, you guys jumped out to an early 2-0 lead and pulled you in within, what, two or three rounds overall, because it goes by total rounds. And, yeah, it's definitely 11-3 isn't a true defining score, because, you know, it is definitely much closer like that. And then towards the end, you know, RVN, you need rounds, so you got to start coming at us rushing more, and, you know, the rounds just start getting away.
Yeah, different dynamic, which I actually noticed, which a lot of the guys didn't realize at first, was that it was the overall score of the two maps combined rather than the overall winner of both maps. So it would have been very interesting if it went to Vigilance and we had to battle it out on that. That would have been classic UF, pretty epic.
That would have been classic SOCOM. I mean, think about it, two classic SOCOM maps. That also has to help in your preparation for a championship match like that, knowing that, wow, Desert Glory, everybody who plays SOCOM knows Desert Glory. Matty, you guys just, like I said, man, you guys just keep winning. I would imagine that it would be tough sometimes to not get complacent and sit there and go, oh, we're going to win this, it's no big deal. Or do you constantly have to stay on your guys to say, hey, you know, we got, once we win this thing, we got a target on our back? I mean, you hear that in sports, but I think it's fair to say that in Urgent Fury, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I definitely would. And, you know, I don't think we were complacent per se, because personally, we're not as strong as we were, you know, last winter when we were winning attack maps. We, like I said earlier, we lost a lot of key players. So, you know, we had to grind out these past couple of tournaments because, you know, we simply didn't have the gun power that we used to have. So, yeah, we definitely need to grind out every war, and, you know, I don't think we take anything for granted. I mean, we had some close playoff matches in this black, LPK, they won the first map, against us, and you know, we were fortunate to win enough rounds the second map. Even RVN, when we played you guys in Summer Boom a couple months ago, I think we had an overtime war in the playoffs as well. So, you know, we haven't had an easy road at all.
Paramedic, you guys, have, as far as RVN goes, you have to feel like that the at least the monkey is off your back a little bit in terms of getting into the postseason. If I'm not mistaken, this might be the first title match for RVN since its inception.
Well, definitely making it to the championship got the monkey off our back. And we actually, if I'm remembering correctly, in Summer Boom, we made it to the semifinals against the U, like Maddie was saying. And it came down to playing a sudden death on Crossroads demo, if I'm not mistaken. And yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, yeah.
Yeah, and that really, you know, we really felt like we clawed ourselves back from the mist of obscurity, as Undertow would say. And we really
had
been nothing but a mediocre clan up until now in terms of what we were doing in the wars. And I think a combination with our improvement of the activity of the clan and the people that we're bringing in, we're bringing in really quality people, people that care about the game and in turn put that same level of commitment to the clan. And it's really brought up our skill level to a whole new level. And, you know, that's what shows in how we got to the championship this time.
And this is something we've talked about, but what changes would you guys make to the Urgent Fury Black format, if you would, or if it's perfect the way it is? I'd like to know that too. But what changes would you guys like to see in terms of the format of Urgent Fury Black?
You know, I do think it's fine the way it is. I don't know how the community thinks about the theme nights. I didn't mind them. I wouldn't mind seeing maybe like every other week, every other Friday or something like that. You know, I missed the Whack and Mole theme nights, so you know, those were pretty fun. But you know, the structure's pretty fine. I mean, it's been running smooth for years now, so I don't think it needs to be changed at all.
Medic, what about you?
I think the theme nights were a lot of fun. It added a completely different, you know, atmosphere to what a typical war would be. The Whack-a-Mole, when you have that, you know, that one enemy guy you got to find on the left side and or in your spawn, and you have to try to kill him without killing the rest of your team. It definitely adds a whole different approach to the game. But overall, I think keeping it to its true form and in a true SOCOM sense would be what I'd like to see. I you know, I don't think we really need to change it if it's not broken. And right now, I don't think it's broken. I think we're just all waiting for that SOCOM 4 to come out.
Okay, really quick, Maddie, where can everybody check you guys out on the web?
It's www.clanuprising.net, and we've recently launched our Call of Duty section headed up by Mike Jackson, so we're not just a SOCOM clan anymore. So if you want to join up, if you're looking for a Call of Duty clan, we're signing recruits.
Paramedic, tell everybody where they can find RVN on the web and everything they need to do to sign up for the Ravenfall.
Well, Ravenfall is still sticking true to the SOCOM. We're not picking up Call of Duty, so if you're looking for an exclusive SOCOM clan with the same type of people that you can play with night after night, www.ravenfall.net. You go over to our forums, register there, you'll get an approval probably within a day or so, and in the meantime, you can send everyone's PSN names an invite, and just shoot it up with us. We're a much kinder and gentler clan than we were 5 years ago in terms of recruiting, so it's not going to be as hard as it is to get in, but we're still holding true to our core values that we're a fair play, no glitch clan.
Very good. Very good. Outstanding, gentlemen. I appreciate both of you taking the time out to be here. Maddie2D, congratulations to Clan Uprising once again for the championship, and Paramedic, congratulations to RVN for making it to the title match. Again, thanks to both of you for being here.
Thanks.
Yep. Appreciate it.
As always, if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please send them to me via email at commanderfury@urgentfury.com. Also, remember to network with us via Twitter, on Facebook, the official Urgent Fury blog, Urgent Fury Unleashed, and on our web channel at youtube.com. Urgent Frequency is produced by Urgent Fury Holdings and right here in the studio by Allison Armstrong, with a special thanks again this week to GameTrailers.com. I remain Commander Claymore Fury. You know the drill. Till next time, keep your feet wet and your powder dry. Hoo-yah!
What's up there, Maddie?
Not a whole lot. What's up there, paramedic, I guess, is... That's
me.
Hola, bienvenue, welcome in. Hello.